is you interlock the two.
Now stretch them quite as
soccer and the fifth.
Quiet, please. In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
I felt like a reptile. Like a reptile. I felt like a reptile.
Yep. Let's roll.
We're rolling?
We are rolling.
Nice. It's good to be back.
It is good to be back.
Hello and welcome to Full Reptile Radio, episode 10. Dude, yeah. It's been a while.
It has been a while. How long has it been? Probably about 4 weeks or about a month.
So this is the third week I've been back off holiday.
Well, I think the last one...
I was
one,
away for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So it's been 5 weeks.
And then last week we were just busy with everything going on.
Yeah. So,
but I think the last time we recorded was just after the Adesanya Pereira fight.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
No. Oh, did we?
Yeah, or did we do a preview for that?
We must have done a preview because I was away. Mate, honestly, the whole thing, because I was buzzing for it. So, obviously, I went to Thailand. It's the first time I've ever been, and it was incredible. Like, a lot of people would have been. If you've never been, if you can go. I mean, I've done Australia, Vegas, Cuba, normal Spains and Greeces and what. But honestly, it was above and beyond just insane. Like, the whole vibe of all of it was the best thing I've ever experienced. And obviously we went on the April the 1st. So we had 3 days in Bangkok and then we went to Phuket.
Right.
So as we're pulling up at Phuket.
Phuket's part of Thailand, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No,
yeah.
It's not like a country on its own.
No.
It's a region.
Yeah. I mean, you'll have heard Phuket a lot because of when the tsunami hit. Phuket took a big hit. I mean, I think that's where it first, everywhere you were, there was like tsunami warnings and tsunami evacuations. And to be fair, it was kind of eerie because a lot of the time you'd be in the pool because you'd either be doing something in the day or you'd just have like a beach day, pool day. And from watching the film with Ewan McGregor, when the wave comes in.
Oh God. I remember watching that at the cinema.
Mate, terrifying. And the thing is, you're in the pool with the kids and it's literally a screenshot of the film, you know, when they're all like just relaxing, palm trees, beautiful pool, beautiful weather, and then they all just get swept away in this wave. So like the whole time you're playing whatever or volleyball or like diving for coins or whatever you're doing, I can just picture this fucking wave come out. And like the beach is, I could literally like throw a tennis ball to the beach. So it was kind of eerie, but you got over it pretty quick. But at the same time, there was constant reminders. And like everywhere you went, there was still rebuilding because...
Really? Even from that long ago?
Yeah. Well, like they're getting it all sort of... It's weird because before I went, I didn't have any real preconceived ideas because Wayne at Fourth Dimension was going to move to Thailand and it's his favourite place in the world. So I've heard a lot about it. I know about the culture. I know about the places. I know different bits and bobs. And a lot of friends have been. So it's always been like interesting to me, but it was such a surprise that like you've got skyscrapers, like the most incredible skyscrapers stood next to like a shack.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you've got like another...
It's like a bit of a juxtaposition between the
fucking
new stuff
crazy
and old stuff.
Like we went, so we're in, remind me about the Adesanya fight, but we went, so... My wife, as you know, is the most organized person in the world. So before we went, she was on about a million Facebook groups. She'd organized all the trips. And basically, excuse me, she'd got a load of advice from random people. And they said, look, book your trips here. And then what happens is they'll give you an itinerary. And like on the first day we got to Bangkok, it was just a case of like just getting there, having a bit of a look around. And we needed to sleep.
How long was the flight?
It was, we went from Birmingham, 7 hours to Dubai, Dubai to Thailand, should have been seven, but it was like, we've managed to do it in 5 hours, 45. And I'm thinking.
Bit tailwind.
Ah, the fuck. Yeah, obviously tailwind, which is physics. But at the same time, I'm like, you put your foot down or what? And obviously, I mean, it was a long flight and we've got the kids, first time the kids have ever done like a real long flight. So we're in this real bougie hotel. It was a massive skyscraper on the river, a infinity pool, like above and beyond anything where I've ever been, like completely outclassed me. But it was a nice experience. So Stacey, in the morning, we're going to go down to the dock, and basically we get met by our guide for the day.
Right.
And we had this guy called So What. And he was like, you know, just think, so what? And I was like, cool. And he was the nicest guy in the world. And basically, there's Thai price and there's tourist price. And because, I can't remember what we paid him. Whatever we paid him, we gave him almost the same in a tip. Because he was like, right, we're going to get this boat. We're going to go over there. We're going to go to a temple. We're going to go to the big Buddha. We're going to go to the park. We're going to go out for dinner. We're going to go to a floating market. We're going to go to a village. And we're like, what? Like, we did probably 11 days worth of shit in a day.
Mm-hmm.
But he was the one like holding our hands, just dragging us through.
Yeah, yeah.
Literally everything we did, we went on a boat that like for six of us or seven of us, it was like £1.20. But it was the Thai boat, not the tourist boat. Then he took us on a tuk-tuk and he was like, be careful with tuk-tuks. They can hold you hostage. And we're like, what? He went, no, the money. They'll say this and then they'll drive you there and it's more. And I was like, okay, I don't really want to get into that. And he was like, but don't worry, I know tuk-tuks. So then he chuck us on this tuk-tuk for like 20 pence. And you could see him just having a conversation. And the next minute he's like, these two, and you'd fuck off around Bangkok. And so everything he did, and if you're ever going, if you need to know what we did, either just message me on Instagram or whatever.
Look for So What.
Definitely look for So What, because he was a fucking legend. He was the nicest guy in the world. He took us to a restaurant. So there was like, you know, the main river. So through Thailand, it's kind of split because there's a big river that goes through. So if you ever watch The Hangover,
yeah,
there's the hotel that has the gold dome on the top. We could see from our hotel, but then there's this big river running through just with boats, like the long boats, ferries, everything. So we'd basically done like a floating village where it was all just houses on stilts falling into the water. People still living there, people still existing and doing everything that they needed to do and just going about their day to day. But there's temples everywhere and all the rest of it. And he was like, are you guys hungry? And we're like, yeah, kind of peckish. So off we went. And he took us into what I can only describe as like a proper Thai Wagamamas.
Yeah.
So if you go Wagamamas, you're going to get like a bowl or a plate, but it's not like an abundance of shit for cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Like a bowl is say 15 quid whatever. Like you might have a starter to share, but you're not, it's not like you're lashing out and there's fucking bowls everywhere. So he basically came over and we had my in-laws with us that aren't really big foodies. They'll try anything, but it's not like they go out their way to go and eat Thai or Mexican or whatever. So he literally came and said, try this. I had a word with a woman at the back and literally they bought trays out with the equivalent of like 9 Wagamama bowls on each one. So there's like a soup and a rice and the noodles and the chicken and whatever meats and all the rest of it. And then when they came to ask for the money, I think it was like £14.
Yeah. It's funny because I followed this guy on YouTube and he made a video of how cheap it is to kind of live and eat in Thailand.
Yeah.
And I think he had like $100 budget.
Dude.
And that lasted him the whole month.
He's a king.
And every day he was eating like a 3-course meal, mate, 3 times a day. And just like the amount of food he got for the price was like, worked out like £1.50 for
incredible,
a 3-course meal.
But they can't do enough for you. They just want to look after you.
Yeah.
So, and obviously I've got 2 small blonde children, which is like, blondes are, they're just not used to it. So everywhere we went, you've got these people like sort of looking and going, oh my God. There's like a golden haired girl. And it's like, and because my eldest is nearly 15, she's like, why are they looking at me? It's like, because they've got dark hair, mate. And and you've got blue eyes. So we went to this place and literally there was just so much. And it's like, but the same thing with the Thai price, because that was a Thai restaurant rather than it being out on the front.
Yeah.
And like, it kind of warps your perspective, because the problem is like, you go to the 7-Eleven, which is everywhere, which we should have in England, but I don't think they've got the same customer services over here as you've got in Thailand, because like, they've got toasted sandwiches and burgers and stuff that they'd literally make for you in like a co-op.
Mm-hmm.
But like a big bottle of Coke was probably about 35p. And like big bags of crisps. Libby was eating these prawn crisps that were like 20 pence. So like you go in there and you could give the kids the equivalent of a fiver and they could empty the shop.
Yeah.
But then in an evening, we'd go to the front where it was like very touristy and you'd get a beer. And I think it's about 45 baht is a pound. So you've got 100 note, but in your brain, you're kind of telling yourself that's a pound.
Mm.
When it's not, it's like 250. So then they'd bring you, you'd ask for a beer and they'd bring you like a little bottle that you'd get in like a 12 pack or a 24 pack and it'd be 100 and something. And my mother-in-law was like, that's really good, isn't it? That's really cheap. I was like, no, that's fucking not really good. That's really shit. That's like £2.20 for a fucking little Stella. And so the majority of shit was so cheap and insane. But this this beer situation really stuck in my fucking throat. But at the same time, I'm eating a 3-course meal for like the same £2.
So I can't
really grumble. But Bangkok was phenomenal. Just like every bit of it. I mean, I took my father-in-law on a tuk-tuk because just up the road from us, there was a place called Asia Teak, which is a bit like a Disneyland. And because we'd been on this whole day out, we then, we got back and my youngest isn't the most adventurous with food. And so she'd not really eaten properly for a few days. And I knew up by this Asia Teak was like KFC, Burger King and all the rest of it. So I said, look, I'll take a mooch up there. It's like, I don't know, fucking 10-minute walk. I'll mooch up there, grab her some KFC. At least that way then she's had something in her system. And Stace's like, are you sure it's Bangkok? You don't know? And I was like, look, and I can genuinely say, never felt unsafe at any point. Like I've been to London and felt more threatened.
Yeah.
And I know the place. So turns out my father-in-law was at the 7-Eleven with my mother-in-law just having a little like recce. And so I got down and he says, where are you going? I said, I'm going to go up the street, grab her some food. He's all right, I'll come with you. I says, oh, cool, safe, nice one. So off we went. And obviously I don't smoke around the kids ever. When I had my eldest, I stopped smoking normal cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes like, when I'm on holiday, because I'm with my father-in-law and he still smokes, I can have a cheeky roll up here and there. So I was like, this is fucking perfect. This is the best. So he walks up the street and like literally every shop is a massage parlor, weed shop, restaurant, massage parlor.
What's the weed situation like there? Is it legal?
Fucking amazing.
Is it legal?
It's incredible. It's legal.
Okay.
Fully legal. So like you go in and they've just got, like with Vegas.
Yeah, yeah.
But not to the same Apple store sort of
levels.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So I went in and the first time I went in, this guy had like 4 or 5 jars out, about 12 behind him. Nice, really clean shop. And I'd said to him, in fact, I need to tell you the whole story about that, but I will in a sec. So this was after my massage that I need to tell you about. So I went up the road and this guy...
Do I want to hear that story?
Yeah, mate, honestly, it's traumatised me, so you're going to fucking get it. So I went in and I just remember when we were in Vegas, we had some weed called Jacarera.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Which was by far probably my favourite that I've ever tried. And I was like, that's what I want. So I said to him, dude, have you got Jacarera? And yeah, 2 seconds. And my brother-in-law, who's well up on green, was like, oh, no, I don't think it's... I think it's a bit more like Canada. They're very low in THC and all the rest of it. So I was like, okay, well, green's green. I can handle it. But turns out they've literally got all the Cali strains. They've got fucking everything. So I said to him, I was like, bit like awkward because I thought, I don't want to stand out the front because I don't know what the situation is. Like when we were in Vegas, you can't just walk around with a blunt.
No, no. Like, I mean... You can be sneaky about it, yeah. But you can't. Yeah, you're not. If you get caught, it's same as Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Well, a little bit different, but yeah. You can't be roaming the streets with it.
Exactly. And so it was when I was like, look, I was leaving to Phuket the next day. So I was like, I don't want to buy an ounce. I just want a cheeky smoke after my trauma. So what have you got? He's like, yeah, I'll just do you a blunt. I'll do you one full blunt of Jacarera and then you can make what you want from that. And I was like, wicked. Thank you, mate. I said, where do I smoke? He went, take a seat.
I was like, what? He's nice.
Like, do you want a drink? I was like, hold on a fucking minute. Like, how is this my, like, this is the best thing ever. So I just sat there, had a big old smoke with him and off I went. So that was but that was all of the shops were there were no pressure, no pushing other than like every massage parlor you walked past. They were like, you want massage? You want massage? And you'd get to the point, you're like, no, leave it. I'm good. So we goes up to this Asia Teak. We had a walk through the whole Disneyland thing, which was bonkers because, again, you see like these houses on stilts and all these bits, but this was like one of the most grandiose fucking things you've ever seen with a big old pirate ship at the back, which converted into a fucking restaurant. Amazing. And I never ever research wherever I'm going. I like a surprise. Like Stace knows exactly what our hotel room looks like.
Yeah, I'm like that. I like drifting. yeah. and just seeing what you come up on.
All day. Like, yeah. I don't want to get there and know what my sheets feel like. I want to get there and be like, holy shit, look at this view. And Stace has been looking at it for like 3 months. So as we get there, I was like, maybe we'll get a tuk-tuk back because I don't want it to be cold. And obviously we've had a wander up. So I basically went up and we started. And I'm big into haggling and bartering. I always have been. So this guy came up and he was like, the most insane price, like 200 quid. And I was like, I'm a tourist, but I'm not a fucking idiot. So we got him down to a few quid. And he's like, okay, come on, me. So me and Stacey's dad jumped in the back of this tuk-tuk. And I swear to God, it's like the guy had 3 minutes left to live. And the 30 seconds it was going to take us home was too much. And he was just fucking hammering it straight down this fucking road. And all the tuk-tuks have got like, you know, the lights you used to get on the fair, like the green, yellow, red, blue.
Oh, like the little tiny bulb lights. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Mate, so you sat basically on a flat bed on the back of a moped with these lights. Every time he braked, every time he accelerated or turned, they would flash, strobe in your face. So I'm fucking like holding onto this bucket of chicken. Stacey's dad's next to me, pissing himself. The guy's absolutely wired, fucking flying down the road. We nearly, like, we went round a corner and we're on two wheels. I'm thinking, this is the best fucking experience ever. I've just got to convince myself we're not going to die. And off we went. And we got off the tuk-tuk, I paid him the money, we're walking back up and Stacey's dad turned to me and went, do you know what? I think he might have been high. I was like, without a doubt, a million fucking percent. He was off his tits. But it was like within a day or so, we were completely immersed in the whole experience.
I can imagine it is one of those places that where you go, you do have to kind of fully immerse yourself into it to have a good experience.
Yeah.
Like if you kind of, you know, staying in the hotels and like pit-pottering around and not, you know,
you're not getting what you mean.
It's like any capital city, you know, you kind of have to immerse yourself so you can find all the like the little secret places to go and the
I just like going for a wander. Just going for a wander, man. Like you take that walk at night and everything's alive. It's just so different. It's incredible because what you're used to is so far from what you're currently living. And you've only got like 2 weeks to make the most of it. So I don't want to be going to bed early. I don't want to be sleeping it off. I want to be like, I'll get home fucked or sleep on the plane, but I want to make the most. So one of the big things was we're going to go for a massage because me and Stace will sometimes have like a spa experience.
Yeah, yeah.
But it costs over here like 200 or 300 quid.
Yeah.
Fucking insane. And then you've got some person out of like college that's just learning, going, is that all right? Is that okay? Is that hard enough? And you're like, fuck. It's like,
yeah,
you have to play along. So the massages there were the equivalent of about 6 or 7 quid. So bear in mind, as a red-blooded male, every massage parlor you pass, you've got a different level of person that's offering you the massage. And if you were there as a single dude, you'd be picking someone out that would fit the person that you would might like to be massaged by. When you're with your wife and kids, it's more about the massage than the experience, if that makes sense, or the person that's doing it. So I was like, look, I'm not here for any funny business.
Just give me anyone, I don't mind.
Yeah, anyone will do because I don't want you to touch me inappropriately because I'm on holiday with my wife. I'm fine. I'm not into that like shit. Anyway, I'm good. Just massage the shit out of me. So the next day after we've had this big day out, Stace's mum, Stace and my eldest went for a massage. They nipped out of the hotel. One of the first ones they saw, they went in, they were lovely. Stace's mum came back and they were all buzzing. So Stace's mum is in her 60s, very active. She was in the army for years and she came back, biggest grin on her face. I was like, you all right? She went, let me tell you. She said, I walked in, the smallest Thai lady came over. She must have been about 70. She had the grip of iron. She took me upstairs and she had a full Thai massage. So this woman was treading on her. She went,
oh, wow, okay.
She said, take your pants off, do this. And she went, so I did. She had my legs around my head. She had this and that. And she felt amazing for it. Stace was obviously then terrified because my daughter's in a different room to her and it's her first experience of being massaged. And they get their paper pants. They get the normal oil massage. Nice and delicate. Fine. So Stace gets back. She went, you want to go Tara massage? Go in there. It's lovely. Take your shoes off outside. Do this, do that. And I was like, cool. My wife's giving me the green light. I know where I'm going. I'm not going to get like attacked. I'm just going to go there for my oil massage. No fucking problem. Got my warning. Brilliant. So I walked in. And like nine women just turned around and stared at me. I was like, all right, my wife's just been in with my daughter and my mother-in-law. She said this was really good. I'd like an oil massage. She went, choose a girl. And I was like, okay. They didn't say that in their story. Fair enough. That's fine, because I'm a bloke. I'll just choose her. I said, who's good? They all laughed. So the next woman, this woman just walked over, grabbed me by the hand and took me upstairs. And I was like, okay. I'm not saying this is rapey, but it's like, it was a bit fucking direct. So off I went. She went, you take a shower. I was like, okay. They definitely didn't say take a shower. No worries. Fair enough. That must be a normal thing because obviously sun cream and all the rest of it. So I'm stood in this room taking a shower. She walked back in. And I don't know if you've had a massage, but it's that awkward bit where you wait.
I had my first one recently when I went to Birmingham.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was great. Oh, yeah, yeah. I enjoyed it a lot.
It's good, but it's that awkward bit.
Just a back massage, so yeah. It wasn't anything.
Yeah, no extras.
Explicit.
It's when they walk you in. And I mean, as a bloke, I can get undressed in probably 1 second. Like Bruce Almighty, just full, it's off. So you know when they walk you up to the door and they go, I'll be back in a moment. I'm thinking, listen, I'm not shy. I'm ready. So I'm sat there like an awkward prick with my boxers on, sat on the edge of this bed and my feet don't touch the floor. So I'm dangling there like a toddler. And I was like, here we go. And she walked in, big grin on her face, took me off the bed, tapped me on the arse with my boxers and went, off. And I was like, my boxers off? Okay. Well, Stacey's mum had to take her pants off. They might have got mixed up. I said, oil massage. She went, off. I was like, okay, fucking took them off, put them on the side. Climbed onto the bed in front of her, which must have been the worst view in the world because obviously I'm now trying to get on
face
the...
Face
fucking down. So I'm lying there and she's fully going to town with like oil, doing the massage. Next minute, I've got my face in the hole. So I'm a bit like this. And she pressed my nutsack like a doorbell and went, you want? And I was like, no, thank you.
And she went, oh, my God.
She did it again. She went, it's okay. I said,
no, it's okay, thank you. Okay.
Fucking terrified. She must have fucking attacked my little sack 5 or 6 times. Just like, you give me a good tip? I was like, I'll give you the best fucking tip if you leave it alone.
Oh, my God.
Stop touching my tail. And so the thing is, lots of people have probably been, lots of people have had the extras. I wasn't bothered. I just wanted a really good massage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So from that trauma, I went back to the hotel and they're all in the pool like, oh, was it? And I was like, she touched me. And that was after I'd had my Jacarera, because I'd gone straight from there to the green shop, had a massive cone, came back, gathered myself and they were like, are you all right? And I was like, so all holiday, all anyone said to me at any point in a restaurant or anything was like, you aren't? I'm like, stop it. It's terrible. And the thing is, it's just normal. It's just the most normal thing. And obviously, if you're single or whatever, that's cool. But at the same time, I'd explicitly said, my wife sent me here.
Yeah,
please
yeah.
Stop touching my nuts. So, yeah.
You're going there for a specific need that you wanted a massage.
Yeah, not
further.
Emptying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So following that, when we're in Phuket, we've got a, there was a, like a massage place within the hotel. And so I went the first time and there was paper pants on the side. And
I like, twitch every time you walk past
mate,
the parlour.
This was it. And I was like, are there that for me? She's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Put them on. Off she went. And she gave me probably 3 or 4 because I got the worst heat rash I've ever had in my life. I mean, you know, my skin's horrendous. But literally, it was the most blotchy, awful shit all over me. And I was itchy. I couldn't fucking cope. So when I went there, she went, oh, you need aloe vera. So she went out, got this massive bowl of aloe vera, massive bowl of ice cubes, and just fucking ooh, rubbed me down for like an hour and a half. And it was incredible. But because I hadn't been to a doctor, and when we went to Bulgaria, I got conjunctivitis, and it ended up costing me about £250 just to be told I've got conjunctivitis, not for the medicine. I didn't want to be stung again, and I didn't want to ruin everyone else's fucking holiday with me in like eating into the budget of our food by getting my skin fixed. So I went to the pharmacy, no one there. And we'd got talking to like the massage parlor next door to the pharmacy because we'd seen them every night. And like they pick up on shit like, I want to massage your tattoos. I want to do that. And you're like, yeah, cool. I've been attacked. Leave me alone. But my wife and kids and mother-in-law all had their legs massaged there. So because we'd been a few times, got to see them. So I was walking back one day from the pharmacy because it was closed for whatever reason. And they said, are you okay? And so I didn't have a top on. And so I just showed her my, like, all this blotchiness. So she went, come with me. grabbed my hand, took me into the 7-Eleven, bought me some tablets, bought me some calamine lotion. And I stood there paying for it. And this British guy came over to me and went, excuse me, mate. I think you'll find there's a pharmacy next door if you go and see them rather than seeing a sex worker. I went, what? Who the fuck are you? I said, dude, the pharmacy's shut. And who's the next best person to know about skin than a fucking masseuse?
Yeah.
And I went, she's a legend. And so she just sorted me out and he just sort of grunted and walked away. But I was just like, how fucking narrow-minded are some people? And it was just one of those experiences. But yeah, it was, other than being like touched. And it wasn't even the worst touch. It was just the way, it was just a, do you want me to do this?
A tap.
It was like a, you want? And I mean, Stace hasn't done it and woken me up with it yet, but I'm having like reoccurring nightmares just from the fucking, because the problem is their hands are about this big, but their grip, because obviously they're massaging people all day, every day, it's just fucking insane.
Just getting thrown around the room by your testicles.
Mate, honestly, yeah, you want? Because if you don't want, I do this. So yeah, so, I mean, Bangkok, that was an experience. And then obviously Phuket, you've got the Phi Phi Islands, which are just beautiful. Just everything you see any like...
I've heard, did you go to a spot called, is it Chiang Mai?
Yeah, I think so. It's a James Bond island, which was done in the Man in the Golden Gun, I think, or whatever it was. I'm not a big James Bond fan, but it was a big thing to go.
Yeah.
And, well, I nearly got into a fight there. We had a boat trip, and you go out on this speedboat, and they take you to like five or six different places. And we had these two American dudes with us, really quite old. Well, no, one was old, one was about 25. But, like, they weren't getting involved in anything. They weren't really, like, open it, like the whole boat was talking to each other, getting on, and they just seemed really, really miserable. But that wasn't the issue. That I'd leave anyone to it. And like, even the girl said to me, because they were having a conversation at this restaurant, and my youngest daughter was like, I feel like I'm listening to a really boring podcast that I can't turn off. And I was like, yeah, darling, don't worry, we'll be gone in a minute. But where you come back into the harbour each time from whichever trip you go on, part of the experience is the monkeys in the mangroves, because that's fucking cool. Like, there's monkeys in the wild, which, who the fuck doesn't want to see that? So we stood there and we'd got talking to everyone else on the boat, and they'd basically said, everyone gets to go on the front throughout the day. And by the end of the day, they came to me and my youngest daughter and they said, have you been on the front? And we're like, no. And so we went for the last 10 minute boat ride. So we sat on the front knowing that we're going to go into these mangroves, and there's this fucking big dude sat there, this younger American dude. And we're all talking and just having a conversation before we got to the mangrove. So then the tour guy came around and gave us these bananas that we hadn't eaten on the trip. Bananas, watermelons, some different bits and bobs, basically to throw to the monkeys.
Yeah.
So they give this guy this banana, and he goes, I wonder if I can get a monkey. And I kind of let it go because I was like...
What, like grab a monkey?
No, hit a monkey with a banana.
Oh, right, okay.
And I kind of let it go because I thought, he can't be fucking serious. And I've got my youngest daughter with me and I'm trying to... Because as a parent, as much as you want to do the experiences, it means more to you to go, right, well, there's four bananas, you can throw all fucking four, because it means so much to them. And like, you're living vicariously through them anyway, so it doesn't matter if you're doing the throwing or they are. So... there's this mom, I can't remember her name, she was lovely. She had a daughter and her husband was there, and like, we'd been talking. So she was stood on the front of the boat there, this guy behind me, and then me and Libs. And he fucking peeled back like he was pitching a baseball and pinged this banana clean across the mangroves. And I mean, God damn it, that was so close. That would have been so cool if I would have hit a monkey in the head. And I just had to turn into full prick. I went, are you fucking serious? I said, what would have been really funny if that little monkey would have jumped on a boat and ripped your fucking face off? And he just went, and literally went full wide mouth frog. Just went, oh, okay. And went straight in the boat and fucking went straight back in. I was like, who the fuck does, who tries to throw a banana at a monkey's fucking head? Piece of shit.
Yeah.
So that was the only like issue that I had. And it wasn't even with a Thai person. It was just with a really fucking ignorant prick. So
it was the built-up anger from the testicle tapping.
Maybe that was it. Maybe he said, you want me to throw a banana at your head? So, yeah, but other than that, like everyone was, they were just fucking legendary. Like the timekeeping, so you got picked up at the perfect time, you got dropped off, they were always yeah. there. Like, and literally throughout the day, the person that Stace had organised the trips with in England months before was texting her, they're going to be there at 6, 10 past 6. Are they there? Are you in the car? Are they on the way? It was non-stop.
Mm.
So all of it was just phenomenal. Like, we went to wash the elephants, feed the elephants. Like, there's a sanctuary where they've basically rescued these elephants from. Obviously, there's a lot of tourist attractions with elephants, and some of them are, they're working elephants.
Yeah, it's like the people that ride them and stuff like that. Yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of, it's like, I'm not into that. I'm not into circuses. I'm not into any of that sort of shit. As you know, I'm a big animal lover, especially monkeys. And so, like, we went to these elephants, and basically they were like, right, take a basket of bananas and just feed them. And you
That'd
know,
be cool.
Mate, you stood literally with your face on an elephant's face feeding them, and their eyes, they've got like, it's just straight into their soul, and you just connect. So then once you've fed them, you then take them into the water. Because I didn't know elephants don't have sweat glands. So what you have to do is you cover them in mud, which then turns into a mud fight with everyone, which was wicked. But then you then wash them in the water, and then you scrub them down. But just to have like 2 hours.
What's that, to like cool them down?
Yeah. And that's like 5 or 6 times a day. So like we had 2 or 3 hours there, and ours was like the third slot of the day when, so you go and feed them, then you go and put the mud on them, then you wash them. So it's stuff that they need to have done daily.
Yeah, yeah.
But essentially you're supporting a sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, mate, like, I just can't get over the fact that I was stood literally cuddling an elephant for like nearly 2 hours. Well, there were 7 elephants. So you just go around them and just like, just be feeding them and stuff. So it's all those little experiences that just made it like a once in a lifetime thing that you kind of can't.
You can't really get anywhere else. Yeah. I've always liked the idea of, I've never been to that part of the world, but I've had a few friends that have, and like Phuket and Thailand, like Vietnam, Cambodia, those kind of areas that they always swear by in terms of like how they look, beautiful places, and like it's an experience of a lifetime. But yeah, I'm glad you had a good time, man.
Yeah, man. There's so much shit to tell you, but obviously I can't keep talking about Thailand for the whole thing. But the one thing I will tell you is that I screwed myself with a Pereira fight, because basically we're going out that day, and obviously...
Yeah, what time would it have been on?
So it's on Thailand at Sunday, first thing.
What, like 8 a.m., 9 a.m.?
Is it Sunday first thing? Or Monday, or whatever. It was basically... It was like a day after what you'd expect it to be. So you've had the whole of Saturday, then you've had Saturday night, then it was like Sunday at whatever time. But the thing was, the main thing was, I avoided it. You know, I always avoid my results, all the rest of it. I was buzzing for this fight. I was convinced Izzy was going to do it. I didn't want to see any spoilers. So basically I had my iPad with me, and I waited until I got back. So I got back home. We'd been on this trip. Everything was fucking wicked. The kids were sorted. They were at the pool. Stace was doing whatever. And so I got my iPad. Press BT Sports, and I was like, here we go. And it said, Pereira, Adesanya, replay. So I pressed it, and this message came up. I was like, it does not appear that you're in the United Kingdom. We cannot play this video. And I was like...
VPN.
Yeah, well, I couldn't. I was on my iPad, and like, I just didn't have the brain capacity to then be like, I now need to set up a VPN and sort it all out. So in a mod, I went straight to YouTube and watched the most janky fucking messed up, like, you know when they flip,
it's like cropped in
yeah, they flip it. Yeah, so I watched it, obviously Izzy won, so it was cool to see. But I mean, one of the biggest mixed martial arts other than Tiger in Phuket is Bang Tao, and that was the town I was staying in.
Bang Tao.
So Bang Tao is like a MMA gym. It's
I thought you meant it was a sport or a martial arts.
No, sorry. Oh, okay. The place we're in was called Bang Tao in Phuket, but then there was Bang Tao MMA.
Okay.
It was one of the most incredible facilities I've ever seen. It had a massive fucking matted area, then it had a weight area and another big... There was like 4 or 5 different massive areas. Brad Riddell was there.
Oh, nice.
Zhang Weili was there. Loads of like... superstars.
Did you go in and have a look around? And
I had a look around, but it was one of them, because I had this fucking heat rash. I couldn't even touch my own skin.
Yeah.
Let alone be like, should we have a roll? You know what I mean? Yeah, so it was, and it was just really cool to see.
Mm-hmm.
Like they had a wicked facility and like there was at least 100 people on the mats every day.
Yeah.
It was fucking heaving.
So where did you, were you in the region of like where Tiger Muay Thai is?
I didn't look for it because I knew that if I'd found it, I'd have wanted to go.
Yeah.
And the problem was because we had like the James Bond and the PP Island trips where we were up at 4 a.m. So then you got back reasonable time, but you'd eat and then you're like, the next day you'd probably have a beach day.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of didn't want to like hold my family hostage to go, we need to go and look at Tiger Muay Thai just so I can get a t-shirt. So it was nearby, but Phuket's pretty big.
Yeah.
And the last thing I'll tell you is that while we were there, it was their new year. I think it's called Songkran. And it's a water fight.
Okay.
The whole country has a water fight.
Wow.
Honestly, it was the most incredible fucking experience of a new year that I've ever had.
Like, what? So everyone just breaks out in a massive water fight?
So they've got these massive barrels outside every... So when I say there's a weed shop, massage parlor, fucking restaurant, weed shop, massage parlor, 7-Eleven, they had drums outside the front with massive blocks of ice in them. Everyone had water pistols. Everyone had fucking buckets. And basically, it was a water fight in the whole country. So like we drove back, we'd release some turtles in the morning, which I know I say is a throwaway comment. It was a magical experience, but we released these turtles into the sea, which was fucking amazing. And then we were in the cab on the way home, and literally everywhere we pulled up, someone squirting our window or fucking throwing one. I'm like,
I was gonna say, clocked in the face for the water.
Honestly, it was just fucking everywhere. And like Stace went, oh shit, yes, yeah, what's it? Because we'd seen these water pistols being sold everywhere, but I was like, it's just part of the tourist thing. And she knew what it was. So next minute, we gets back and we walked our street. And honestly, dude, I was fucking drenched. And the kids, I bought them a water pistol each. So we went up the street, got all the way to Bang Tao. They had a fight with the fighters, came back. Everyone's out and they're dancing. They put this chalk on your face and fucking do all this stuff. It was so cool. But like a car would pull up with the windows down and they'd get a bucket of water in like a brand new Civic and they'd just laugh it off. I'm like, ah, happy new year. And off they went. I'd be like, if you spill a glass of water in my car, I'm fuming.
It's like a drive-by, but water.
Honestly, and it finished about 5:30. But on it,
how long does it last? Like all day?
All day. And you
can't. That's sick.
But you can't go anywhere because we went and we were having a water fight for hours and hours and hours. And like at one point, it was about 5:30. They said it calms down about 5:30. And I was like, cool. We had packing to do because we were coming home on the Friday. That was the Thursday. So we went back up into the room, got everything sorted, packed everything away. And I was like, man, we've got to go out for something to eat. So we went down into like our hotel had a driveway in, half the hotel this side, half the hotel that side, like hut style. And opposite is where the 7-Eleven is and all the rest of the shops. And there'd been a German couple around the pool, youngish, about 25. And like we'd seen them, but not really to talk to. And we were stood just at our entrance to that complex. And they'd taken a step out of the complex. And like, they must've been getting ready for about 2 hours. She looked fully suited and booted. She'd probably shaved from fucking toes to teeth. He was all made up and they walked out and they stood there like trying to work out which way should they go tonight, left or right. And it was like a scene out of like World War Z with the fucking zombies. And obviously all these people are drinking as well. And they spotted these two people come out the hotel.
Aww.
And they were like, fucking get them. And literally 30 people just ran at him. And he bolted the guy. He ran off. His missus stood there and she took probably, I don't know, 30 buckets of water straight over her, like in one go. And she just stood there and she's like, okay. And turned around and walked back towards the hotel, fuming. And I was like, you can't really not expect it when you've just been part of it.
You've got to embrace that kind of thing. And I think if you're in a place, it's hard, I suppose, if you're not like culturally aware of what goes on at certain times of the year. But I feel like something like that should probably present itself to you before you go to somewhere like that.
Well, it's kind of the mardiness that makes it even more hilarious because we were having the water fight with there was a Norwegian family underneath us. Dead sound, proper lovely guy, him and his wife and two kids. We were in water fighting with them all day. And basically, there was a girl coming out of 7-Eleven and everyone's fair game. And she'd taken like this fucking glass of water over or a bucket of water, whatever. And she went up to him and she went, excuse me, I've got my phone in my hand. And he was like, okay. And she went, look, you got my phone wet. And he went, no problem. Is it an iPhone? She went, yeah. He went, it'll be okay. And she's like, but I'm really, and like really adamantly wanting to put her foot down to be cross about something. Like, dude, have a Coke and a smile, man. There's a fucking weed shop 2 minutes away. Just fuck off. And like this other English guy came up to me, he's like, can you imagine this in England? After the first person got wet, there'd be a fucking fight, wouldn't there? And I was like, yes, there would. And he was, yeah, everyone was just fucking drenching each other. I had a hose pipe.
That's sick. I like the idea of that.
It was the best. It was honestly like, to be able to get hold of a hose pipe was probably the best because I didn't have to refill anything. I just had people coming up to me and I was filling their buckets. But I was
they're
like,
banned. You can't use them.
Yeah. Mate, I was absolutely smashing the hose pipe duties. So yeah, it was, other than the Pereira situation, I mean, missing.
Yeah.
I was kind of in the perfect place to be down about it.
You missed, well, you watched, so you watched the main fight though.
I watched it all eventually.
Yeah.
I caught up on it all. Obviously disappointed for Masvidal. I kind of knew, we kind of said that was what was going to happen.
Because was that the same night that Alexa Grasso beat Valentina? Well, that was, actually no, that wasn't.
That was a long,
I'm getting cards mixed up. What was on the Pereira Adesanya card then?
So there was Masvidal against Burns.
Was that on that one?
Yeah.
Okay, I suppose, yeah, because Burns is fine this weekend. It's short notice.
And then Santiago Ponzinibbio.
Right, I see, yeah,
against,
yeah.
Against,
yeah.
Was it Holland?
Yes.
He looked good.
Yeah, it was a great card, to be honest, yeah.
Yeah, it was a decent, it was a decent numbered event, man. And that was the problem because I'd kind of got myself excited the whole day to think, well, I've not seen anyone. I've been in the middle of nowhere. No one's going to go, oh, you watch Pereira. But like the best thing that I found, there was a bar called Blow that was like a weed bar, but three guys there, nicest fucking guys you could meet. And literally at night, once the kids are asleep, I would go up there, have a joint with the boys and then go back. And like, got to know them really well. They were really nice, really fucking welcoming. And they had always had like UFC playing on the screens. I actually, because I took all my own, well, obviously all my own, I took my t-shirts and all my clothes with me because I had like duplicates. So I said to them, look, do you want these? And so now on all their videos that I'm seeing, they're always wearing like full Reptile and stuff.
Yeah,
so
nice.
It was really cool. And it was nice to like share it with them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so,
yeah, it was, if you can go, definitely go.
I would like to. I've never really been too hot on that. Well, I've never been, it's not the place, my desirable place to go in the world, like that part of the world. But I would like to maybe one day go there, check it out and
definitely
see what's going on. But yeah, I'm more like, I'd rather go like Canada or New Zealand, somewhere in that region. But
I'd like to do them. It's just, I think, because obviously we did Australia before, and we've done New York. Like the Canada one, I'd really like to try. My sister-in-law's been and said she said it was like America, but calm.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah, that's my kind of scene.
Yeah, I can live with that. I can live with that. But loads of stuff since we've not caught up.
Yeah, I was going to say, what events have been on since we've not caught up?
Well, did you watch BKFC last week? Did you see the...
I did. Luke Rockhold and...
Mike Perry,
yeah. To be honest, because Perry knocked his tooth out, didn't it? That was kind of what
cracked,
like, finished
his tooth.
Yeah. Oh, cracked.
Mate, it's...
Oh, it was like split in half, wasn't it? Yeah. I thought it would last longer than it did, but I think Mike Perry's kind of found his vocation.
He's built for that.
Perfect vocation, yeah.
I mean, everyone's got a chin, and obviously everyone's chin's got a lifetime or a lifespan, but he seems to just get it done, and I think he seems more turned on in the ring or the cage than anywhere else, because there was times when I was watching the build-up that I thought, is Luke Rockhold getting the better of him? You know, because Luke Rockhold's quite well-spoken.
Oh, you mean between like the band back and forth?
Yeah, and obviously Luke's quite a bit bigger than him. Like Luke has fought at like heavyweight, he's fought at middleweight. Excuse me. So I didn't know if Luke was going to find his feet a little bit in this because he's got the range and the rest of it, but he just seems built for it.
Yeah. I think, like, obviously that he obviously won in the UFC, but he wasn't like super successful. And if I think he's smart to go in, because like BKFC attracts those kind of personalities as well, doesn't it? He's like perfectly made for it.
All day.
He's got a great chin. Like, he loves to scrap.
He's got platinum tattooed above his eye. Yeah. Like, that's a win all
it's
day.
A wild sport for, like, a wild character, and he certainly fits it. And I liked how he... Well, he didn't really call McGregor out, but he was like, I want to face off with McGregor.
Yeah, yeah.
McGregor walks the in with the title. The fact he was
there. Yeah, but... Because Conor almost sent bipolar, because he was like, at one point being like, thanks a lot, but then be like, I'll fight you. And obviously, he's nailed probably a litre of fucking proper 12. But it was just, I think because he's got that air of just not giving a fuck about anything anymore. Like, I know obviously him and Dana are close, or they get on, or they work well together. But he's kind of, because he can just work his way out and into anything and like do it in a sort of... Not in such a brash manner. You know, when he jumped the cage at Bellator, he's doing it in slightly a different way, but just to see him in there was like, that could be cool.
Yeah.
And it would be interesting to see, because the thing is, I mean, Dan's always said it, like, bare knuckles are a different beast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hitting someone or hitting something, like, with nothing on your hands is there's consequences.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that I was always a big fan of Mike Perry, But he was outclassed quite a few times. And so for him to now go, all right, well, there's no kicking.
Mm-hmm.
He can't push me over. We can't go down. So literally we're going to fucking stand and bang. So that was good. The Alvarez and...
That was a great fight, yeah. Chad Mendes. And Alvarez, yeah.
Mate.
I'd like to see that run that back, to be honest, because it could... Well, it was a split decision, wasn't it? So it could have gone either way, but...
No one really lost, did they? But it was, I kind of got that Mendes retired, because I know that obviously his stint in the UFC at the end, like, Conor sort of halted that a little bit. Like, he had the chance against Jose, which could have been, I know obviously Jose was just a fucking animal. So the fact that he lost that, and then when he did retire and then came to BKFC, I was like, cool, that's a cool name to have in there. Because he's like that short stature, that real stocky, like, power punching stature. And I was like, that could be fucking good. And when it was pitched against Eddie, I was like, this is going to be fucking gold, which it was.
Yeah, but they seem to be making like really good matchups that maybe you know, they've got a lot of history behind them, and they're kind of like rematching them, but within BKFC now. It's kind of, I mean, there obviously wasn't anything between Luke and Mike Perry before, but it's like these matchups that you kind of fantasize about almost. It's like they're being put into this like wild, crazy bare knuckling scene. It's,
well, the work's kind of been done. Like, the history has been made by the UFC, which had a few more rules in place.
Yeah.
It is like Rockhold and Perry, because they were different weight classes.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that they're coming together is like, I think it kind of doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter what MMA show you're watching. It doesn't matter what fight it is. But if you recognize anyone, it gives you that little bit more spark of an interest. Yeah. Like, you could watch, I mean, all the BKFC, there's that, I can't remember his name and I don't want to butcher it. Is something Baboon or something like that? I don't know his name, apologies, but he is a fucking animal. But because he's been an animal brought up through this sport, I don't know enough about him. Whereas as soon as you go, Eddie Alvarez, I'm like, I'm fucking there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, it's a genius platform, because the work has already been done. And the research and the development had been put into all the fighters to raise them or whatever within a different organization, that now you've got them, even on like Masvidal's card, you've got something where you go, I know that fucker. So once you're watching it, it's a lot like the UFC's now, because UFC's come around so much faster. Like, I used to be able to tell you every single fighter, their nickname and their record on the roster. It's impossible now because there's that many.
Mm-hmm.
But what you find is, they'll put a main and maybe a co-main that gets your interest, but then you end up watching from the prelims, and then you start finding your new favourites.
Yeah, yeah.
Which obviously is just a business thing. It works really well. But I think whenever you've got someone that is kind of, it's like with the Jake Paul and Nate Diaz thing. Like, I'm never buying a Jake Paul fight. I'm interested and I'm intrigued and I don't mind watching it and I like seeing it unfold. But now he's fighting Nate Diaz, I'm like, I think I need to watch that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I need to see that.
I think, but the only thing is, because like obviously this weekend's fights, Aljo Henry, I don't know if you watched the press conference last night, where Henry was kind of talking about his plans within, then, you know, if he beats Aljo, he wants to fight O'Malley. Then after that, he wants to move up and fight Volk. for the featherweight title.
Yeah, and I saw him kick the teddies off the stage. Yeah, not quite the pillows. Kick them off. Yeah.
But the only thing I find at the minute is, like, by people doing that, it kind of holds up divisions a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, obviously, you know, we've still not seen the Yair Volk fight.
Yeah.
And that could go either way. So, but it's, yeah, I just feel like when there's people like Henry and same with John Jones coming back into the sport, it just seems to hold up the divisions a little bit because the people who have been fighting and constantly working.
It just kind of
get pushed back a little bit.
Yeah. And it stutters that momentum a little bit because, like you say, once you've got something rolling and like it's someone like Izzy that wants to fight all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Or like these fighters who are, or Kevin Holland is willing to fight all the time. Mm-hmm. It seems like the only good thing from that is that you're climbing a ladder.
Yeah.
You don't want to be doing it for kind of nothing.
It's with the, it's like with the trilogy fights and stuff. It was the same with the Moreno Figueiredo thing.
Yeah.
It's like, obviously there was a break between the third and the fourth fight and Moreno beat Kaikau France for the interim belt. But I don't know. It's just like,
it's always working back to that same narrative.
It doesn't need to be like, you don't need to face each other like straight after, I don't think.
No.
It's like if you face a champion, obviously if you lose, but then, I don't know, give someone else a chance and give the champion another look and then it might change hands again and then you've got a whole nother...
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same like with Izzy and Pereira. Like, I think... You could run that 12 times.
Yeah.
But the problem is, I think sometimes you look at the lay of the land for Izzy and he's cleaned it out.
Mm.
So then you've got Pereira, who's this fresh prospect, essentially, that has the history is 3-1. And you could keep running it, but it's like you say, you've got to give it, like even make the number one contender, give that the same sort of hype.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole way that the UFC is promoted nowadays, back in the day, you used to know the cut man's name, the coach's name, the training partner's names. Everyone was raised at the same level. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So like, I wouldn't normally know Stitch Durant's name or fucking like, we're rolling.
Oh yeah. Bird.
Yeah. Bert Watson. So like there's these kind of people that are integral to the sport and give it a lot more angles because they would talk to Bert and he'd be telling you about what's happened backstage, like stuff you wouldn't know off someone else and all the rest of it. Whereas now it's like they've got a budget for half a dozen.
Well, it's because it's social media age. It's like, who's going to get the, you know, they won't give the fight to certain people. It's like the whole like Bilal Muhammad thing.
Yeah.
And you know, like Dan mentioned the other day on the podcast, the same reason with Leon got held back. It's because, I mean, the performances are great. They're not finishing people. And I think, you know, it heavily revolves around that. But there's also an element of like not really having much of a personality or much of a fan base outside of the UFC as well. And it's like when you've got people like, you know, Izzy's like a massive superstar and, you know, people like Cejudo and O'Malley and stuff, they've got a big following elsewhere. Yeah. So they know they're going to draw that crowd in as well as the MMA fans already.
Yeah.
And I feel like they do focus on that a little bit too much now. And people get pushed back a little bit.
Or when you look back and you've got like the GSP era, GSP, he couldn't really even speak English that well when he first was on the scene. Same as like with DC. DC was never a fan favourite, but you'd tune in, you'd watch it, you'd always watch it. And I think because you're watching everyone raise at the same sort of level, it was such a different experience because like the embedded and everything was a lot more geared to like just educating around the whole thing, not just an individual superstar. And I suppose like where the Conor effect has come in, I mean, obviously you had it with Brock a little bit, you had it a bit with Ronda, but nowhere near to the degree that you had it with Conor. And obviously, like, partly he made it incredible.
Well, he kind of set that standard now, isn't he, for people?
Which he has, but, and it's mostly seen as a massive positive. But at the same time, you've got the lower levels or the, like you say, Bilal's and fucking Leon's that essentially, they're worthy of a title shot. Like, we had people back in the day getting title shots because they'd run through everyone else.
Mm.
But you still was tuning in to either see this amazing champion get dethroned or them do what they're going to do. It's like when you look at, like, Mighty Mouse has got his fight this week, hasn't he? Tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. Third fight against Marais.
How can you hate, like, Mighty Mouse?
But I might say as well, that card is stacked.
On one.
The one championship fight tonight. If you've not checked it out, obviously this will be out after the event, but I think you've got DJ Marais, Rod Tang's fighting, you got Stamp Fairtex, you got Aung San, I forgot his name. But yeah, if you're familiar with the one and like the franchise and everything, and the fighters on the one championship roster, it's going to be a wicked card. If you should definitely tune in.
Do you reckon,
or if you have, I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah. After the fact.
Yeah.
Do you think DJ will hang up his gloves after this one?
I don't know. I think it depends. I don't know. I've not heard any new. Is he came out and said that?
Yeah, he's said that, because I think it's the first time his family's going to be there.
Right.
And
okay.
He said that he's probably going to be his last, or maybe his last one.
Yeah.
But I mean, the thing was, it was like when he fought Cejudo the first time. Like Cejudo is obviously, since, I know the people he's beaten has been impressive, but when you were tuned into DJ's run and how good DJ is, and the fact he stopped him with that knee, like if you listen to that first fight with him against Cejudo, I know Cejudo is coming in off these massive accolades of like Olympic and all the rest of it. DJ just, he was like, nah. And if you listen to that fight back, just listen to when that knee lands and the noise that Henry Cejudo makes.
Yeah.
Because any king of cringe that was a part of him at that point was knocked out of his stomach by DJ. I know obviously then he fought again and came back to win it. Was it a split decision when he fought DJ? Because I thought that DJ had won it. I know obviously he beat DJ, but it was by decision.
Mm.
And I still think that DJ...
I can't remember that last their last fight.
The one where Cejudo got the belt. Yeah, well, he won and obviously went on to then beat the who's who of the fucking weight class.
The one thing I appreciate about Cejudo is the way he's kind of picked his opponents, and obviously beating DJ is like a massive accomplishment, like regardless, but the way he, like even now he's come back and he's picked the right time where he feels like
he's the best chance.
Yeah, because if you've got like, say if Petey Yan was champion, or I don't know, maybe Marab or something like that, or even Omar, I mean,
Sanhagen.
I just feel like he's been very smart about how he's kind of, because he's not, if you look at his record, I think 16-2, he's not got a massive record.
Yeah.
Yet he's held belts in both divisions and he's Olympic champion.
Yeah.
But I would, it's like he claims to be like the best combat sport athletes ever. But then when you compare it to someone like DJ with his record and who he's beat and the amount of time he held the belt for, that eclipses, you know.
Yeah,
I think, in my opinion,
I find it difficult with Cejudo, just because I don't think he's sure of his own character. So you never see the true him. He seems like this. I know, obviously, there's the king of cringe, which I struggle with because it's so bad that it's not good. So, he's got that he's playing, but, like, what he's actually achieved is incredible. And knowing that he's done it from a struggling background is even more impressive. But I don't think we've ever seen or heard from the real Henry. It's always been a character, like, you know, when someone, I don't know, you know when someone's just a bit smug? Like, you know when you'll see someone ask someone a question, they go, well, you know, and you're like, come on, man, just be fucking real. So they were asking him about Connor, and he was like, well, he was a bit disrespectful to my manager. He's like, hold on, isn't this the boys, the dictators that you were hanging out with in his fucking mansion? Like, how can you start having morals about how someone was... Don't get me wrong, the whole Khabib's dad thing and all the rest of it, that's kind of shitty. That was shitty. But when it comes to, like, Ali Abdelaziz, that's it. Yeah, I mean, he's got a shaky past, and he's got some connects. Yeah. And it's one of them where you're like, I get you defending your boys.
If Owen isn't here next week.
You know exactly where I've gone. So it's, I don't know, I can't help but respect what he's achieved, but I don't know if he's going to run through Aljo like he thinks he is.
I think personally, if I was going to make a pick, I've already decided on Aljo.
I think
I just think like Aljo. I don't think he. I mean, he's not the most exciting person to watch, and he's not the most exciting personality within the UFC. I don't think, but like. I think he's being massively underestimated.
1,000%.
Like he's got a massive like size advantage on Henry, yeah. and obviously I know Henry is a bit more suited to bantamweight, like you know the weight cutting thing and whatnot. But I think he's you know at the end of the day he used to be a flyweight. Like Aljo's always planned to go up to featherweight,
yeah,
and because he's just more of an and the, even when they were facing off yesterday, like there just seems to be a massive size difference. I don't know if Henry will be able to deal with that as well as he thinks he will.
Yeah, yeah, and you know when you look at what Aljo's achieved, and he's been current, and so like Henry could have been training every day in the gym,
yeah,
and obviously he's training with monsters. I get that, but actually having a camp, having a fight booked. Making the journey, having fight week, then walking out, getting the pop, getting in the cage. He may walk it off like nothing's happened.
Mm.
He might Tony Ferguson it. But at the same time, he might fucking not.
Yeah.
Because is it 3 years?
It's been 3 years. But it was because I saw an interview he did yesterday and he was talking about like how he's cut from the same cloth as John Jones and like, you know. But when John Jones came back, it was like he's already got this vast like history of like being so dominant,
yeah.
Like for such a long time. Henry doesn't have that. He obviously he's been champion in two divisions, but he wasn't like he didn't dominate that whole division. He beat champions that probably weren't the best champions at that time.
Yeah.
Well, that's not DJ, obviously, but it just doesn't really. To me, he doesn't have that same kind of resume as someone like John Jones.
Not at all.
So no. I don't think he can step in there and...
No. I mean,
you
can't take away from the fact that he's achieved what he's achieved because he has beaten, like, obviously, Dominic Cruz and Dillashaw. I mean, there's always a question mark with Dillashaw, especially with what were you on? Or what weren't you on? Or what the fuck was happening? Yeah. And obviously, with Dom on his knees and all the rest of it. But like you say, it's not like he was facing the Yan. He wasn't facing the killer at the time. Mm. And obviously... Like, with the only thing that swayed me slightly or put a slight bit of doubt in my mind, I wasn't aware that DJ trains now and they're quite good mates.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Him and Henry are good mates.
Well, this is the thing he was talking about as well. Like, the champions go to Henry Cejudo for specific training and whatnot. But I don't know whether he's kind of just manipulated that into him.
Yeah.
It was like who was it? Like Yuri, Zhang, Figueiredo, John Jones, obviously. And, you know, and obviously that's happened and people are doing that and going to him for help and work and whatnot. But he's very good at making sure that everyone else knows that. Do you know what I mean?
And that's what I mean. That there's no doubt that the guy is mad skilled. And he is really fucking good. There's no doubt about that at all. It's just seeing someone's true personality and how they are compared to like a really strange, like false ego character is, I don't know. I mean, I think that's why I admire Leon a little bit because he's not he's like, you want me to play a character? Nah.
Yeah, and I appreciate that more.
And he's like, nah. And there's no doubt that he's incredible and he's a fucking great fighter and all the rest of it as Leon, but he's not selling pay-per-views, but really he's there to fight. So like, look, you get what you fucking get. And we've had it with champions in the past, we'll have it with champions in the future. It's just with Henry that he's chosen to create this weird personality and then, like you say, any narrative, it's like, yeah, he's answering a question the other day and he's like, yeah, well, he's actually really quite complimentary when I'm breaking him down and stuff. And you're like, right, what? Like, be you.
Mm-hmm.
Just be you. Because I would love to really want him to win and follow him and be like, I really fucking like this guy. But actually, like what Aljo went through with a whole knee to the ground, it was a weird thing. I mean, in that moment, his whole resume was kind of pulled from under his feet. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like you look at his record and he's done nothing but fucking win. I know he's got a couple of losses, but it's not like he's done bad. He's fucking dominated in the shadows. So when he did get that call up, and obviously Jan was an animal at the time, and I feel he was piecing him up and looking good. But the knee happened. Now, majority of fans, the majority of casuals and fucking diehards are like, oh, bullshit. You can't tell unless you're in the fucking place and all the rest of it. So the only thing you can do is rerun the fun, as Pat Sharp would say on Funhouse. So off we go. And fucking, he made it look easy.
Yeah.
He made it look easy. So with that in mind, like, and then he fought Dillashaw. I know apparently Dillashaw had one arm or whatever, but who knows if fucking Aljo had one arm. But when you've got the team, when you've got fucking Matt Serra and what's his name? He's fucking, that's
Ray Longo.
Yeah. Such a good fucking, it's a good family unit that's like just iron sharpening iron. I honestly think that Aljo takes it. But who the fuck do I know? I never. Mm. It's so difficult to know.
It's not the best pay-per-view. It's a bit, yeah.
It's a little bit.
I mean, the main card's great, but I don't think I'm going to stay up for this one, but we'll see. It might be an epic main event. I think it will be, because there has been such a long period of like build up for it between Aljo and Henry. As soon as like Cejudo signed to come back and stuff, it's been lurking in the shadows. But yeah, it's I'm looking forward to seeing him back and seeing how it plays out.
Yeah, and what are you saying about Burns?
Bilal and Burns. I think Burns takes it. I think he's on a bit of he's got a lot of momentum at the minute, and I think because he probably sees this as his last chance to make it to the title again. Yeah, I'm backing Burns.
Can Bilal Hamzat him?
Yeah, but no.
You don't think?
No.
Bilal's fucking tough, man.
He's another one who like kind of doesn't really maybe get the.
He doesn't.
But the props that he deserves. But
is that down to decisions?
Yeah. What was it? 16 decisions out of 22 wins.
Which the problem is, there's so many fighters back in the day. There's so many fucking times that's happened.
Mm.
Like, look at John Fitch. John Fitch, I don't know if you know him or remember him. He was like, I think he had like a 19 fight unbeaten streak, something like that. GSP beat him. And then he got into a contract dispute about his likeness on a game. And like Dana was like, cool, fuck off. Yeah, dude, he's an animal. Mm. I mean, he got beat after, but obviously that's going to fuck with your head no matter what. And I think regardless of how you're getting the wins, if you can't stop being stifled either by the wrestling or whatever it is, then that's the bit of the mix in the martial arts that you need to fucking get better at.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of them where, like, you can't have your very best fighter being third on the roster because they're boring, because they're the fucking very best guy. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. If Khabib never got that shot because he was basically ground and pounding people, then he wouldn't have ever been champion and had that fucking, that final finish. So it's kind of, I don't know, like, once you see Rocky do it, and then Rocky put an exclamation point on it, in my opinion, because not only did he win in the most insane way with a head kick, but then to come back and go, all right, I get 5 more rounds to try again and fucking and look even better. So, like with Bilal, I don't know, man. He's never been to the dance. He's never had that championship option. He's never been where Gilbert's been. So I think it just burns a different fire. And because he's like, they've made this as like a late replacement, haven't they, for Oliveira?
Yeah, Oliveira and Dariush, it was meant to be, yeah.
Yeah, which would have been an amazing fight.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously that would have maybe just, because like Dariush is a similar one where he's so good. He's a tough old guy that's like, he's about, but his expiry date is getting closer because he's getting older.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, with Burns and Bilal, I've kind of not got a dog in the race. I'm excited to see. Yeah,
I'm excited for that fight because I think there's so many, like a lot of things that Bilal's good at, I feel like Gilbert can kind of negate it, and then this vice versa. Both, you know?
Yeah, yes. So we might not see that much grappling.
Mm-hmm.
We might see a little bit of stand-up, and Bilal's a bit longer than him.
Mm-hmm.
And Bilal's got a decent jab. I mean, he's got good hands. Well, they both have, but obviously Bilal being a bit taller and a bit, we saw it the weekend with Jimmy, and when you can't make that distance, or you can't like miss that jab, it kind of, the game plan is it gets a bit more rocky. Yeah,
it's halted as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And obviously if then they're both going to negate each other with takedowns, it's going to be an interesting fight. Mm. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. It's just, I kind of don't know. I can't really pick. I mean, I honestly think Aljo's going to probably take the main, and I wouldn't be surprised if Bilal takes it.
Yeah.
Just, and Burns, it's like when Andrade came and fought the other day. She fought one and then fought on a short notice, and she got beaten.
Mm.
And I'm not saying that Burns isn't ready, because he's more than ready, but turning around that quick, and you're not turning it around against some fucking clubman. You turn it around against a ranked, hungry, wanting to prove a point opponent. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And especially with Bilal wanting to get back to Rocky after that eye poke, because who knows? Bilal could have taken that fight and he could have been next in line.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
It was like, because I think Bryce Mitchell's pulled out as well.
Yeah.
But he released a video saying that, you know, he didn't want to go in there at like 65%, 75%.
Yeah.
If he's going to do it, he wants to be in there 100%.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, it's true. You can't, as much as like time's against you, and, you know, you probably do more damage than good if you go in there at like 70% and,
yeah,
you know, but then again, it's like you need to get paid and all that.
I think the benefit, like I was saying earlier about fights being every week now, like back in the day, it was once every couple of months or whatever. Like you would be preparing for an event, and if you dropped out of that, like the amount of people, Frank Mir, Sylvia, so many of them would give you whatever fight you're talking about, and they'd be like, yeah, well, my left leg was broke. I couldn't hear for 2 weeks. I had a fucking slip disc, or I had three broken ribs. It's not as essential to do that these days, because Bryce Mitchell, there's going to be half a dozen cards in the next 6 weeks that he could be like, I'm ready now, and they can chuck him back on.
Yeah.
I know it's a numbered event. It's nice to be on a numbered event and all the rest of it. But at the same time, your record means something for your standing in the position of the sport at the time. Like, if you don't give a fuck, then yeah, crack on. But obviously, if you want to climb the ladder and get to the point where you're numbered and you're obviously a champ, it's a lot different to where you're fighting at 70% or 80% or whatever. And it's just, I think he's made the right decision, because is it Mazai? What's his name? Who he's against?
Who?
Who was Bryce Mitchell fighting?
Oh, right. Movsar Evloev.
Evloev, yeah. That's it.
He's a dangerous.
He fucking is dangerous.
Yeah.
And that's why you can't take it. You can't take it lightly, man. So, I mean, is Cron Gracie on this one as well? He's not fought since 19.
He's been out for 3 years, I think, as well. He's fighting. I can't remember who's fighting.
Let's have a look. I'll have a quick look for you. But he's like, mate, he's a fucking, when he came in, I was like, this is the fucking guy. He's going to be...
He came out and made a statement, was it yesterday, about that he thinks that there shouldn't be rounds. It should just be like one long fight, like a 15-minute fight or a 25-minute fight.
But that's a real typical Gracie way of thinking, because when you go back to like one, two, and three...
Jiu-jitsu guy way of...
Well, I want you to get tired.
Yeah.
And the reason I want you to get tired is because then I want to take you down and I want to fucking drown you. Which, I mean... It wouldn't be, I don't know, like there was tournaments they used to have in Pride, there was different time limits they used to have in Pride, and there's been so many different elements of MMA that have been coming up through the years that have been and gone, that it might be interesting that if UFC 1 week was like, do you know what, we're going to do a tournament, they're going to fight three times in a night, you'd be like, fucking hell, this is old school, let's go fucking all the way back. And
Why do you think they don't do that anymore?
I don't know, man. I mean,
is it just the evolution of the sport, or
the evolution of the sport, the safety of the fighters, the trauma, yeah. The like? You imagine, you watch any of the first few UFCs when people are fighting two or three times in a night, you could have a concussion after the first fight.
Yeah,
and then you now, so it will probably never happen. And the 15-minute thing will probably never happen, because as much as we call this a fight, it's a contest. It's not just a fight.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, I mean, Conor McGregor said it when he was talking to Mayweather. He's like, don't get this twisted. This isn't a fight. This is a competition. If we were fighting, I would fucking kill you. And you think, well, you probably fucking would. Because anyone who's ever had their legs taken away from them, or been dominating, or been fucking drowned by jiu-jitsu or grappling or anything, it's an uncomfortable feeling. It doesn't matter if you've got the heaviest hands in the world. Someone negates all of your limbs and then just starts to do whatever they fucking want with you. It's a scary place to be. So I get what you're saying about the 10-minute rounds or 50-minute rounds, but when you've got stuff like Slapfest coming up and fucking bare knuckle, you never know. Someone might make a new tournament system where you're fucking fighting for 15 minutes. But for every fight that was exciting for 15 minutes, there was equal fights where fighters stood with their hands on their knees just like, just really trying to gather themselves. It's not a good look.
No.
And it wasn't good for them, because that 1 minute, they are getting a bit more information, they're having a bit of a drink, they're having a second to fucking gather themselves. And that is how people now train. They don't train for 15 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was Kron's against Charles Jourdain.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah. I think Jourdain's probably going to fuck him up.
Yeah, I mean, his last fight was against Cub, wasn't it?
Mm.
And Jourdain's a lot like Cobb, like he's a game striker. So it'd be interesting. I mean, when he came out before, and just, was it Bruce Leroy that he wrapped up and he just seemed unstoppable.
Yeah.
And he just, the Gracie's light was shining so fucking bright again. You're like,
I think there's
shit.
A lot of like having that name though, man, it must be a lot of like pressure on you.
Must be. But did you see him mug off Henry Cejudo?
No.
So on one of the embedded, Cejudo sat and he's signing posters, and he's like, hey, is Nate here? And he's like, no, he's at home with his kid. And he said something, and then Cejudo's carrying, and he's signing his posters, and he's like, God damn, I'm handsome. Or something like that. And Kron was just like, I don't want to be around that guy. Didn't say, but he was like, just let me know when he's finished. And kind of walked off.
Right.
And he's, because he obviously trains with the Diazes as well, doesn't he? So he's fully Stockton. But it's like, it's a bit like having a Rolls Royce dragster. Do you know what I mean?
Having
a bit of a fucking, like, he's got the regal element of the Gracie name and the skills that back it up and all the rest of it. But under the hood, he's a fucking gangster. Do you know what I mean? He's hanging out with Nate and Nick. And that's, I mean, that breeds a different kind of fight. And the Diaz brothers never really send anyone out ready to get beaten. They send them out ready to fucking die. So it'd be interesting. I don't know. I mean, I'm just excited to see a Gracie back in there. I love it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It would be a fun card. I was going to ask you if you saw the Tank Garcia fight as well.
I saw the highlights, and fuck me, that was a liver shot, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was weird because it didn't really look, I mean, obviously like Gervonta Davis is like fast as fuck, but it didn't see it's one of those like glancing shots that you don't think does a lot of damage, but it's like, it's if it's in that perfect point and it just shuts his body down. Yeah,
I mean, over the years, the amount of fights I've seen that if you blink you miss it, it's honestly like, I mean, you only have to be punched a few times, and you could be punched the slowest punch and you're still like, fucking, you feel it days later. So you know when you see someone get dropped and you think, like, you're not gonna, like, the whole build up to this fight, and you've been saying this, you've been saying that, and you can't, you've got 10 seconds, mate, there's not a great deal in getting up, because it's only gonna get worse from here. So maybe take the L.
Yeah, I think he, you know, came out like, you know, with his head held high. It wasn't like a, you know, what was it, eighth round. And I could see it happen, like that fight running back again as well. They're both still like young in their career.
Yeah.
But Gervonta is just so, I love watching him, like his head movement, yeah. like how he just reads his opponent, and he's just an enjoyable person to watch, and like just to be able to like, especially at that weight class, just to be able to end it with one shot. Mate. It's cool.
It's anytime you see a new face or anytime you see someone that you've got, you can tell that they are not just interested in taking a part in the sport, they're obsessed.
Mm.
And when you see someone like that, that is clearly like, I mean, Stallone nailed it when he made Rocky, that like the underdog, someone coming up from nothing, but you can always train. So you could be Ivan Drago with all the greatest fucking equipment in the world, and you could have all the fucking scientists around you, all the rest. But hold on, what the fuck is inside? What's inside, and how much do you want this? Because when you see that hunger, and you can see that that is years and years and years of repetition, that someone's only getting better, you're like, there's something fucking special in this mm-hmm. kid. Like, I don't know if you've seen it. There's a documentary out called Catching Lightning.
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
You need to watch it. So it's basically, it's Lee Murray, who's obviously from England, and he was part of the biggest cash robbery.
Right.
So
I know the story. Yeah.
So Lee Murray was a part of the robbery, but before that, he was in Cage Warriors, and he was a fucking animal. So fast forward to him fighting Jorge Rivera. So he basically went...
Is this in the UFC?
In the UFC. So he fought once in the UFC, and he was in Cage Warriors, taking over the world. Like, no one would fucking get near him. He was just destroying people, but a fucking handy dude.
Mm.
He was a bit of a criminal, into like...
Just in
that world. I mean, I've grown up with these kind of guys that yeah. like, yeah, they might be into a bit of dealing, or they might know the fucking wrong kind of people, or they're working on the doors. Just whatever you need to imagine from that underworld of England in like 2000, that's what he was into. He had his fingers in the right pies. Anyway, fast forward to Cage Warriors, and he's obviously dominating. So then the UFC comes to England, to UFC Brawl at the Hall. I think it was UFC 33. So you've got Matt Hughes there against Carlos Noon. You've also got Ian Freeman. That's when he beat Frank Mir.
Right. Oh, yeah,
so you've got the whole of the Miletic camp, which basically Lightning Lee Murray has gone over to train with the Miletic camp, which Pat Miletic at the time, he was, I think, the first middleweight champion before they changed the weights. You've got Jens Pulver. Mm-hmm. You've got Tim Sylvia. You got Robbie Lawler, you got Matt Hughes' brother, Tony Frickland, fucking low, like a who's who of killers. And Lightning Lee Murray's like, I'm from England, I want to fight. And they're like, cool. And he hung in there with them. So before he gets his shot in the UFC, they're in London in a nightclub because they've had the UFC event and they've taken them all to the event, to the club. Tito and Chuck are still friends. So you got Tito and Chuck's like crew. You got the Miletic crew, and basically they all get kicked out into the street, and it kicks off. Well, earlier in the night, Tito snubbed Lightning Lee Murray. Frickland's like, introduced him to go, hey, Tito, this is Lee Murray. He's like, whatever sort of thing. Because Tito at the time, he was the fucking picture, the poster boy. Yeah. He was on everything. He was in the game. He was the best character. He was UFC. So obviously the ego goes with that. Whereas Lee Murray's like, don't mug me off, mate. I'm a fucking gangster. So basically gets out into the street and it's all kicking off because someone threw like a rear naked choke on someone just as a bit of play fighting.
Can't imagine like a brawl, like a street fight brawl between like a bunch of
MMA fighters. Well, this is what Pat Miletic was saying in the documentary. He's like, when the police got there, he's like, don't fucking spray him with anything because you're going to get really fucking hurt. Because bear in mind, this is like 2000. So this isn't like current fucking CCTV. We've got dogs. This is just, there's going to be a lot of fucking bobbies on the floor. So basically Tito, the story has always been that Lee Murray knocks him out. Tito has always strongly denied it.
Lee Murray knocked Tito out?
Cold. And he was always known for, well, that's why it's called Lightning. Lightning fast hands. And he hit him with like a 5-punch combo. Crack, 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 crack. And obviously you've got Pat Miletic, Tony Frickland, all these guys saying, and he did this. Whereas then you got Chuck kind of defending Tito, but the whole thing has always been, he knocked Tito out. So fast forward to when he's then made his debut, he's basically gone up against Jorge Rivera at the time, who was really up and, well, doing really well, tough guy, and he triangled him. So he was then meant to fight again in the UFC, but basically had a road rage incident by this psycho that tried to attack him, piece of shit, but went on his record. So he ended up fighting Anderson Silva before Anderson Silva made his debut in the UFC.
Ah, okay.
So you imagine, Lee Murray went 5 rounds with Anderson. He probably overtrained, they think, and he was a bit flat, but he went 5 rounds with Anderson Silva, who was fucking good at the time. He's still Anderson Silva. Anderson Silva then made his debut, and I think his first 4 or 5 fights, I don't think it went around. So you got Chris Lieben, destroyed. Rich Franklin. Was it Travis Luter? I can't remember. Whoever it was, Anderson Silva wasn't fucking about. But Lee Murray went 5 rounds with him, took his best. So it's like, it's a cool thing because it's a four-parter, but you've got like his build-up. I've kind of explained a bit of it to you, but you've got the build-up, the UFC background, the fighting background, then you've got the robbery. Fuck me, man, like millions. And just interesting how they did it all and how they got caught. But it's a really cool, it's called Catching Lightning.
Oh, I'll check that out. The thing is, you don't really get that. I mean, obviously the sport's changed and it's a lot more like professional now. And I guess it's the same as like, you know, when you had like footballers back in the day, like, you know, fucking smoking cigarettes and like drinking and going out, like the Gascoigne kind of characters or whatever. But yeah, like once the sport gets to that point of like professionalism and like you don't really get those
corporate.
I mean, they're probably, corporate. You don't. I mean, they obviously come from, like, I guess the closest thing to that nowadays is, like, the Diaz brothers and, like, Masvidal. But it's played, like, they're used as, like, this character within the sport as that person.
Exactly, because there's all lawsuits and shit now. Whereas back in the day, it's like, you imagine that brawl. And when you watch it and you hear who was involved and who was fighting who, you'd be like, if this was like a Colby Masvidal fucking lawsuit or a fucking...
Well, the Diaz
Jake Paul lookalike fucking...
Yeah. I've seen Masvidal like tweet at Nate, like, if you need a lawyer, I've got one. That's pretty cool.
Which is cool, but it's not the same. It's not the same grunge.
No.
It's not the same grime. So interesting. It's good. And the only other program I tell you to watch very quickly is Jury Duty.
Is this the one you mentioned, the series?
Yeah.
Okay.
So basically, one guy, so all these people in America, they wanted to make a documentary on the American judicial system.
Yeah.
About a case. So they all applied.
Is this a
reenactment?
It's
a mockumentary. Okay. Well, it's a documentary, but it's fucked because it's so good. And basically, you've got one guy who's there and he doesn't know it's not real. Every single other person is a setup. So all the other jurors are actors. The judge is an actor. The plaintiff, the fucking, every single person is an actor.
Okay.
So they keep throwing mad shit at him all the time. And he's the chairperson of the jury. And like, they're just laying this shit on him. And he's like, this feels fucking weird. And it's so interesting because basically he's never done it before. He takes it really seriously. And you know James Marsden, who's in Sonic the Hedgehog? He's Cyclops in X-Men.
Oh, yeah.
He's been in fucking everything, right?
Yeah.
He's a juror as well. And he gets there and he's waiting, right? Because obviously there's like a jury of your peers. So basically there's like 100 people, then they choose the 12 from or whatever. And James Marsden's there and he gets talking to him. And then he realized, like, oh my God, you're an X-Men, you're Cyclops. And James Marsden plays a really massive douche of himself.
Right, okay.
So he plays James Marsden, but he like fucking really hams it up.
Yeah.
And he's talking to him and he's like, oh, you're Cyclops. He's like, listen, when you're talking about me, don't tell people about the X-Men thing because it's a small part. It's like, there's bigger films you can tell people. And he's like, oh, okay. He goes, I was in Sonic. And he's the main human character in Sonic. And he goes, oh yeah, I heard it was shit. So the whole thing, it's only like 8 parts, but if you get a chance to watch it, it's fucking really interesting.
Yeah, I'll
it's,
check that out.
Yeah, it's good, man.
Is it like, obviously there's the one guy that isn't aware of this is going on.
Yeah.
Is it like a social experiment kind of thing?
Kind of, yeah, right. Kind of. And I don't want to tell you too much because it's just... There's just so much batshit crazy stuff that they kind of throw at him to see what happens.
Yeah.
And like one of them's having a breakdown and he's like, what the fuck? And it's like one of the jurors, she's constantly falling asleep. So now he's getting a bollocking because he's like the head juror to keep her awake. And he just keeps waking up and she's having a go at him. And like, obviously it's all made up, but he's taking it mad seriously. And obviously, as you would, because you're on the jury. But if you get a chance to watch it, it's fucking superb.
Yeah, I think the best thing I've watched recently is a show called Severance.
I was meant to watch that, but I started watching Shrinking instead.
Oh, man. We should revert back to Severance. It's probably one of the best seasons I've watched in a long time.
Is it Adam Scott?
The guy from Step Brothers.
Yes.
The douche brother. It's him. He's the main guy in it. And it's, what's his name? There's a few people Patricia Arquette.
Yeah.
She's in it. She plays like the corporate boss kind of person.
Okay.
There's a few people you recognize in it. But what the story's about is like, so there's this massive corporation that people work for, but the people that work for them within this specific area or what's the word? Like department.
Yeah.
They all have this implant in their brain. So when you get hired by this company, you have this implant in your brain. So it separates your work life from your personal life. So when you go to work and you go down in the elevator, you forget all your memories. So you essentially have two lives. You're like, you have your work life and you have your personal life.
Holy shit.
And each of those lives don't remember anything about the other lives. It's a really cool concept because it kind of plays on like today's corporate, you know, people working 9 to 5 and being brainwashed and shit. But then the people in the workplace start getting curious about what their lives are like outside of work.
Yeah.
And it's like they're trying to kind of, I won't tell you too much, but it's really gripping because there's people involved in it that are kind of trying to cover up stuff and like you don't really know why and they don't actually know what they're doing as their job. They're kind of like counting numbers, but they don't know what the numbers represent. And but then they get essentially it starts off with this new employee coming in, but she gets like really depressed and she's trying to like get out and she keeps constantly trying to escape. And it's fucking great, man.
Nice.
Yeah, I think it came out last year at some point, and I didn't watch it when it first came out, but I got recommended by so many people, and it's great.
Yeah, well, I never like to be drip fed. I don't like to go back to the old days of it's on a Sunday and like you have to wait. So I wait for it to all, like Ted Lasso's nearly finished and I fucking love Ted Lasso. So I'm waiting for that to finish so then I can do it in a couple of days rather than be like, it's Wednesday, it's 4 o'clock. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we watched it. Well, it was on Apple TV, actually.
Okay.
So we watched it on Apple TV.
Just streamed it straight through.
Yeah.
Yeah, sponsor us Apple TV.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, I'll watch it. I'll have a look. I'll definitely.
Yeah, it was a really cool season. Really cool.
Nice.
But yeah, man. Yeah.
So it's everything. What else? I'm conscious of the time because I know that this we need to edit this and get it up before it's too late.
True. I mean, yeah, so we've got the fights this weekend. We're going to get back to be doing these again like weekly as well. We've had like the full reptile camo drop,
dude,
that everyone should check out if you haven't already.
So it was last week. Last Sunday, we went back to the 4 o'clock Sunday drop, and just thank you to everyone who supported us and obviously bought their bits and bobs. I mean, it's always limited. We're not a big company. We can't buy thousands of everything. So we've got small numbers of bits that you've all been involved in. So thank you so much for anyone who's grabbed any bits. Let us know what you think, how you feel, or tag us in some pictures. Obviously the sponsor, as always, New Shirt, have been releasing. There's a load of retro stuff that have been coming out. So a lot of old school gaming consoles. There's the Joypad t-shirts, like they're depending when you started. I mean, mine would probably be, if I had to have my first ever one, would be a Master System controller. But they've got the Master System, the NES, Mega Drive, Genesis for overseas, SNES, and N64 so far.
I like their... it's like in the Sega font, but it says Vegas.
Yeah, man.
That was pretty cool. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah, they've got some cool shit. And I think what I like about what they do is it's kind of understated. So it's like that. Someone would see that and not everyone would get that it's the Sega font, but or someone that would play in their mind to go, where the fuck have I seen that before?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like they're just on the Turtles collection and it's just their weapons or like the sewer drain cover, which if you see the right person and they notice that, you know instantly you need to be friends with that person. So it's a good eliminator of pricks. So basically get some shirts from New Shirt and you can then get some new friends because they will be more in tune with what you're into.
Yeah. No, it's a really cool brand. I've been liking a lot of their stuff recently, yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And there is one last little sad note that I just want to mention because one of our OGs who's been following Full Reptile from the first 100 is a fella called Jim Asoon. And just our thoughts are with you at the minute, my friend. He's recently just lost his wife. So we just want to let you know that we are here for you, my man. And I'm sorry that you're going through what you're doing, but stay strong and stick with it, dude. I hope you're okay. It was last week. It was a bit of a sad news drop, but he's always at our back and always followed everything we've done. So
yeah, all the best to him.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. But yeah, so, you know, we're going to be picking up these again every week. We haven't caught up about everything today, but we will be catching up every week again, talking about the fights, talking about what we've got going on. So yeah, please like, please subscribe and, you know, share our videos. Yeah. We appreciate it a lot. But yeah, man.
Nice. Well, always good to be back, dude, and nice to sit with you for an hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah, yes.
Awesome, dude. Right.
Good, man. Nice.
Take
one.
It easy, dude.
In a bit.
I felt like a reptile. Like a reptile. I felt like a reptile.